So he went and he at least, it was the last attempt to wound Yaakov Avinu. Rashi says that the wounding of Yaakov Avinu was, in the Kaf HaYarech, refers to damage the Talmidei Chachamim. The Talmidei Chachamim will always be poor and always struggle to survive, struggle to stand. Okay, it's symbolic. I think the Chassam Sofer says, you have a Yerecho, the Chassam Sofer is a very chiddush. I don't know, Dr. Friedman, if there's anything to this. The Chassam Sofer says that the Gid HaNoshe is connected to a person's, to the Bris Mila.
What?
It's connected to the Bris Mila, to the Eiver HaZochar. The Gid HaNoshe, I don't know if this is what the Chassam Sofer says. There's some type of connection. Yigav Kaf HaYerech, is that he was poigea he damaged the aver of bris mila, right. Meaning you have to go to the Rambam. Oh, very good. That's exactly what I want to talk about. Very good, very good. And not the Gemara, you talk about something else. We'll get to that in 1 second. And what basically means is you have to go to the Rambam. The Rambam says, why is it that we have a bris mila? This is touched upon around the Rambam. Says a tremendous chiddush. I don't know scientifically what they'll tell you, but it seems that it's correct even today. Is that there are certain nerve endings that are present on the orla, and one of the many reasons why Hashem demands that we Klal Yisrael remove the orla on the go bris mila is to diminish the pleasure a person has in marital relations. Because on the nerve endings of the Arla, which is connected to its original state, a person would have a certain enhancement of taiva. And as being part of Klal Yisrael, a person has to learn that he's supposed to be mimaye, to diminish his taivas in this world. This world is not about satisfying yourself. It's about serving Hashem. And that demands sacrifice. And part of that sacrifice is to take away the ability, the taiva that a person would ordinarily have. Obviously, this world, there's a lot of problems in this world and this and that. So it goes to show that doesn't take away much of the taiva. Because look what's going on in this world. People have tremendous difficulty overcoming their Yetzirah. But it would appear from the Rambam is that it would have been worse. If a person would not remove the Arla, his battle with the Yetzirah in matters of Davar Sheh B'Kedusha would be even more difficult. So therefore, when the Esav, the Sar Shel Esav, saw that he's not succeeding in overcoming Yaakov and destroying him and completely eliminating him, at least what he did was that he damaged Klal Yisrael specifically in this matter, that our ability to overcome the Yetzirah in matters of Arayos would be a very difficult battle. And our ability to, by damaging that part of the body, in essence, he was damaging our ability to overcome the Yetzirah in these matters. And proof is in the pudding that he succeeded to a very large degree, because throughout Jewish history, Klal Yisrael was nichshol very, very often in Gili Arayis. And the fact Chazal say, it is symbolic. It is symbolic. It's both. I mean, it's first of all, what does the Gid HaNoshe have to do with the Bris Mila? Physically, is there such a connection? First of all, what is the Gid HaNoshe? So this is a Gemara. The Gemara Masechet Chulin, you look at the art scroll Gemara, they have illustrations. They have illustrations. What exactly is the Gid HaNoshe? Then you have to match whatever they show you in the art scroll illustrations. And the Gemara is a whole big topic of discussion. What exactly is the Gid HaNoshe? That's by an animal. Match it up to a human being. Is it exactly the same? Is it a little different? I don't know. I really don't know. But the Gid HaNoshe is, in a very simple level, is a remembrance. It is a zecher. Every time you shecht an animal and you remind that you're not allowed to eat the Gid HaNoshe, it is a reminder that we live in a world where we struggle and we battle against Esav HaRasha. Esav is trying to take us down. He's trying to destroy us. and he did succeed in at least injuring us. And therefore, we have to be on guard that much more so that any moment in time, Esau will attack us, and we are vulnerable, we are weak because of the damage that he has done, and we have to strengthen ourselves and be on guard more than we ordinarily would think that is necessary. Okay, that's Simba. That was later. Later he was healed. Vayavo Yaakov Shalem. Shalem the Gufoi. He was healed. So that's symbolic. Ma'isa of a similar bonim. Did we... Whatever happened to Yaakov Avinu is a siman for us. We have certainly, in the middle of the struggle, in the middle of the wrestling match, did it happen to Klal Yisrael, that part, Vayizrach Loi Hashemesh? That's when Mashiach comes. Vayizrach Loi Hashemesh, Vayavo Yaakov Sholem has not yet happened to Klal Yisrael. Ma'isa Avol Simon, we're still in the matziv of the wrestling match, and Vayiga Bekaf Hayarech. We in Jewish history did not yet reach that point of Vayizrach Loi Hashemesh and Vayavo Yaakov Sholem. That did not happen yet. We're still holding, we're still waiting for that to happen when we will be healed from the battle of Esav and the damage that he has inflicted in Klal Yisrael. Okay, now let's go to what Rabbi Naaman, what you mentioned of Zohar Nekeva. So there's a very famous story. I want to, this is something which almost every single sefer, B'li Yoytzim Min HaKlal, and every rabbi, I remember in Tar Vadas, I remember Rav Pam spoke about this a few times. This is like most, one of the most famous things about Gid Hanosh is the Maisa with Rabbi Yodis and Eibeshitz. Rabbi Yodis and Eibeshitz wrote a sefer called Crazy Uplacy. And in the Crazy Place, he writes the story, what happened. There was a person that came to his town. He came not only to his town, he went traveling all over the Jewish communities, all over the world. I don't know what that means, all over the world, but whatever, he went over and he said that everyone is making a big mistake. All of the butchers assume that the Gid Hanosha is the nerve that is shown in the art scroll Gemara. They have a beautiful illustration in the Schottenstein edition of Masach Tehulin. And it's a very good, clear, crystal clear illustration of the anatomy of an animal, showing you exactly what the Gid Hanosha is. All of the opinions, Rashi, Tosfos, v'chulu, what the Gemara says. And he says, art scroll got it wrong. This is not the Gid that the Chazal, that the Gemara is referring to. And he identified a different Gid, and everyone got it wrong. And he presented proofs that he is correct, and he was passionate. Extremely passionate that everyone is making a big mistake. So Yonis and Eibeshitz, what it seems, was a mumche, was a mumche in these matters. He was a menaker. He knew he had to dissect the animal. He knew all the anatomy. He knew how to, you know, all the dilemma of chelev, and he had a very long discussion with him. And at the end, he told him that he's wrong. He's wrong. Wrong. Why is he wrong? Because the Gid that he identified, this person that came out of nowhere, identified Rav Yonis and Eibeshitz, showed him, only exists in a male animal. This Gid, this sinew that he claimed is the true Gid Hanoshe, does not exist in a female animal. And he opened up the Sefer and he writes there in the record of what happened. He writes that I opened up the smag. The smag is the Sefer Mitzvos Gedolos. And in the smag, it says that Gid Hanoshe applies to Zechorim and Nekevos. So how can you go show me that the Gid, that we're all wrong, the Gid that Hanoshe that we identify today in the market is not correct, and the correct Gid Hanoshe that it's usher to eat is a different Gid, when the Gid that you identify, I'm showing you, only exists in male animals, does not exist in female animals? And being that the Smag, which was a Kadmoin, like a Rishon Kamat, the Sefer Mitzvos Gedolos says that the laws of Gid Hanoshe apply to both male animals and female animals, it can't be. That means that it has to exist in a female animal, and it does not. And that was the end of the story. And Rabbi Yonis and Eibeshitz, he won the day. He writes, he documents also in Crazy Placey in his Sefer, and at the end of the day, he won, and Shalom Al Yisrael. Along came people who came afterwards. Oh, very good. The fact checkers. Along came Mayor Appeldorf, and he opened up what he said in the crazy place, see? And he let me see what Itaka says in the smag, the Sefer Mitzvah Skidoilos. Opened up, and Nishkehoigin, Nishkefloigin. There's no such smag anywhere. He did a do a computer search. Yeah. You can go do all the different editions of the smag, the art school edition, the Feldheim edition, the Ois V'Hadar edition. There are no footnotes. Garnish from garnish. There's no such smag anywhere that says that Gid Hanasha is a mitzvah that applies to male animals and female animals. The only thing that we're commonly talks about males and females is the chinuch. Is the chinuch. The Sefer HaChinuch is also a Rishon. And there in the chinuch, Itaka says that it's noheges bezuchorim uvinikevos. But the problem is, whenever the chinuch writes, every mitzvah he goes through males and females, achatzi eve, no, that's the minchas chinuch. But every time it says in the chinuch, zuchorim uvinikevos, it doesn't refer to animals, to the chefs of the mitzvah, it refers to the people. Who is chayiv in this mitzvah? So it comes to Kriya Shema, Noshma Potter. Why are they Potter? It's a mitzvah saseh shehazman gromo. Are Noshma chayiv in Bris Mila? Of course not. They don't have an Aver. They're not a shaykh in this mitzvah. Are Noshma chayiv in Priya or Via? No. The Chivshua, the Nan, the Chana chayiv. Every single mitzvah, the Tayag mitzvahs, you have to ask, who is chayiv in this mitzvah? Who is a male, a female, at what age? All of the laws. Whenever the chinuch says zuchorim and the kevois, he's not referring to the object, he's referring to the gavra, the person. So therefore, everyone has come along and said, what in the world is going on? The smag, the Rabbi Yonasan Eibishus, he documents the story. And he told him, I showed him what it says in the smag. Number one, there's no such smag. The only thing that we assume what he really meant to say was he's shown in the chinuch. But in the chinuch, it says it's noheges bezuchodim unikevais. But there, it refers to people.
Eating.
Who is not allowed to eat, males and females. So this was a very big mystery until people have come along. I have all the names, I can't remember every single detail, but people have come along and they said they went to an auction, I don't know, I'm just making things up, and they found an early edition of the Crazy Place that was published by Rav Yonasan Eibishus himself. And there they found he made corrections to the text. He made corrections to the text. There were some printing errors. It was not properly typeset. And one of the printing errors Okay, one of the printing errors is that where it said Samag, Samach Mem Gimel, Rabbi Yonasan Eibishus himself, he crossed out the Gimel, and instead of a Gimel, the letters are very similar in their Tzura, he put in a Nun. So instead of it saying Sefer HaMitzvahis Gidoilos, Samach Hey Gimel, which would stand for, I'm sorry, Samach Mem Gimel, Samach Mem Gimel, Sefer Mitzvahis Gidoilois, he put in Samach Mem Nun, Sefer Mitzvahs Nikur.
A Gimel doesn't look like a Nun, though.
It's pretty close. A Nun is just the leg is a little bit twisted. Well, whoever typeset his hand notes made a mistake, and instead of putting Samach Mem Nun, put Samach Mem Gimel. And the correct gear is Sefer Mitzvahs Nikur. Nikur means to remove, it's a term used usually exclusively for chalef. Nikur means to remove from the meat the chele of the forbidden fats. And typically in these svarim, the Sefer talks also about the Gid Hanosha. Oh, Sefer Mitzvahs Nikur. Whoever heard of the Sefer? Sure enough, after some research was done, there was a Sefer that was published called Sefer Mitzvahs Nikur. And in that sefer, it indeed explicitly says, this is from a Kadmon, someone who knew this stuff, from whatever, this is an authentic sefer with an authoritative sefer. It says there, beferish, that the mitzvah of the gid is found in male animals and in female animals. It's found in both type of animals, and when you slaughter an animal, you're not allowed to eat the gid hanosha, whether it's a male animal or a female animal. And now the mystery was resolved. Indeed, the gid that this individual who showed up and made a whole commotion that everyone is making a mistake, indeed he claimed it was a different gid. And Rabbi Yonasan Eibershitz said it cannot be that the gid that you're referring to is correct, because the gid that you're referring to only appears in male animals. And the gid hanosha, and it says in Sefer Mitzvahs Nikur, which is an authoritative sefer on this topic, says it applies to male and female animals. And therefore, this cannot be the gid, and we now uncover a printing mistake. You know, the dangers, the printers. The printers, they've done quite a job to call you. So there's a lot of things about printer mistakes which have caused incredible change of minhagim and halacha. All different types of problems come from printers who make errors. And this is just another example. And we take out of this lamaskana that the gid hanosha is a gid that applies to a zohar and a nekeva. Now, this is a very, very famous story, what we just mentioned. Now, I just want to just dwell upon it for a few moments, not that I have any answers, is indeed, itaka is very interesting that the gid hanosha should apply to males, animals, males and females, because the Chasam Sofer says, And not even the Chasam Sofer, you have Rashi and Chumash. Rashi says that the gid hanosha, vayiga b'kaf ha'yorech, which will take the Rashi. See how Rashi exactly. It was damaged on the Nechachon. The mitzvah of Talmud Torah only applies to men. There's no requirement for Noshim. Noshim have to do mitzvahs, and there's a big topic that they have, a chiv Talmud Torah. I'm not here to go get into any chas shalom politics about women learning Torah. Many women know a lot more than the men. Okay, we're talking about the mitzvah deraisa v'shinantam livonecha v'dibarta bom chazal darshin livonecha v'loy livnoisech. Women can learn all they want, and many women know quite a bit. But yet the mitzvah of Talmidei Chachamim is something which is exclusive to the males. The Rambam, the Chasam Sofer, when he darshins this, I think it's a medrash. I don't think it's Chasam, it's a medrash that actually, I remember once spent time on this medrash, that Vayigah Bekaf HaYoreich, he damaged the Bris Mila. Bris Mila, beyond a shadow of a doubt, is a mitzvah that applies exclusively to men, not to women. So it is very interesting that. Maisa Shahoya Kachoya. Okay, Maisha Kachoya. B'diyevet, a woman can do a Bris Mila. It says in Shulchan Aruch. A woman. But L'chatchila, a man should do Bris Mila because a person that is chayv in the mitzvah should do the mitzvah. A woman is not chayv in the mitzvah for herself. Mamela, she's not the ideal person that should do the Bris Mila. So my only observation is, it is very interesting that the Havamina should be that the din of Gid Hanosha should only be found in an animal where the Gid does, this Gid, this sin, if there's such a thing scientifically, I'm sure Dr. Friedman can fill us in on this, is where a type of sinew, where the sinew only exists in a male animal, not a female animal. Because generally, it's very nice when the agoda and the halacha are aligned. Doesn't always happen, okay? You have, you know, the world of halacha and the world of agoda are completely different worlds. It was like I said, when Chazal, what came before the Talmud Bavli? Before the Talmud Bavli was the Mishnayos. Where did the Mishnayos come from? Where was it drawn from? The Mishnayos was drawn from basically Medrash halacha. What is Medrash halacha? So from Chumash Shemos, it's called Mechilta. The Chumash Vayikra, it's called the Sifra, or Taras Kohanim, and Chumash Bamidbar and Devarim, it's called the Sifrei. These are what's called Medrash Halacha. It's not so big, it's pretty short, but it's condensed, and the Mishnayos are basically, the concepts are derived, and the Gemara certainly is from what's called the earliest writing of Torah Shebaal Peh, is Medrash Halacha. At the same time when Medrash Halacha was put in writing, there was another body of work called Medrash Agada. And we always like to talk about this, is that there are two different worlds. When you learn Talmud Bavli, it's Bavli, it's Bolal. Everything is mixed together. You learn Daf Gemara, so look at that. Today we're learning Agadah. Tomorrow we're learning Halacha. Sometimes in one day, I don't know. Talmud also, I think it's the same thing. Talmud also is a mix. It's also a blend of Agada and Halacha. The Talmud Bavli is Bolal, Bavel, Lashon Bolal, is that there's a lot of integration of Halacha and Agada. But where it comes from, the Mekoros of the Talmud, the Chazal clearly separated the two. They don't mix. Don't mix the two. Divrei Halacha is Mechilta, Sifra, Sifrei. Agada, Medrash Rabbah. Chazal didn't, when they wrote the Mechilta, they didn't include in the Mechilta Divrei Agada. Hayluchud v'hayluchud. Two passing ships in the evening.
What does Agada actually mean?
Homiletics. Is, don't take it literally. It's everything is a metaphor. A metaphor when it says something in the Torah, with an evil or sitin michshol, don't give someone bad advice. That's not a good example. But what does tzitzis represent? Everything in the Torah, besides it having the basic rule, the laws, the dry principles, there is an element of metaphors, of inspiration, of mussar. And the two were written as completely separate works. There was no integration between the two. Now, we very much appreciate when the two of them do come together. And this case is very interesting, is that the Divrei Agada would certainly lean to an idea where Gid HaNash only apply in a male animal. Because where does Gid HaNash come from? Vayiga b'kaf ha'yirech. What happened? Vayiga b'kaf ha'yirech. So the Medrash says that he damaged the bris milah. And Rashi on Chumash says that he damaged the support of Talmidei Chachamim. Let me read you the Rashi over here. Let me try to find it here. Vayivoser Yaakov levadoi. I know there's a Rashi, somebody can't seem to find it. Let me see. Medrash Agada, Vatsarachal. I can't find it, I apologize. I thought I had it over here. No. Okay, but the Medrash says that he damaged the support of Talmidei Chachamim. Talmidei Chachamim is something which is male, not female. And Bris Milah certainly is male, not female. Yet, and this Menacher says, I found the new Gid. This is the Gid. And Rabbi Yonasan Eibach is proving you wrong, because the Gid has to appear both by the Zohar and the Nekeva. And the Maskan is the Halacha does not differentiate between Zohar and Nekeva. In the Divrei Agada, it's something which is a male-dominated field. And that's interesting, has the Divrei Halacha and Divrei Agada, it's a very good Musar, they don't necessarily, Halacha and Agada can be completely different worlds. Halacha, the Gid HaNashe, applies to a Zohar and a Keva, period. When it comes to the world of Agada, what exactly did the Sidna Shalais of Duti Yaakov Avinu, he damaged the examples that Chazal give, the damage done to Klal Yisrael, were primarily focused on the male element of Klal Yisrael, because that's the halacha. V'shinantam levenecha levenecha levenasecha, and bris mila assuming only exists by a zochan and a keva, and I just want to know make that observation. And also, it's interesting is that taku when it comes to the mitzvahs, you really go through every single mitzvah. Talk about chaylev. There's no differentiation between the chaylev of a zochar and a keva. It's when it comes to korbanos, what's interesting is that when it comes to korbanos, there in many instances there is a hakpada of an animal being a male or a female. So when it comes to the dinim of chulin, of eating gid hanoshe, and chaylev, and treifos, all the laws of basically, there's absolutely no distinction between a zohar and a nekeva in the laws of hilchos treifos, in the laws of chaylev, in the laws of gid hanoshe. Yet, when it comes to korbanos, there's a very big hakpada. There are many korbanos must be an ayil, a male animal. And then there's se'ira or kifsa. When it comes to a carbon, for a carbon chatos, it has to be specifically a female animal. Today we live in a world, you know, there's some shagas with the world, what goes on, and males, females, this and that. It's interesting that the Torah, when it comes to davar shebekidusha, when you makriv the carbon on the mizbeach, the Torah is very specific as to what type of animal it wants to go on the mizbeach, zohar and nekeva. But when it comes to us dealing with a behemoth as an object of chulin, it doesn't matter. It doesn't matter if it's a zohar, it doesn't matter if it's a nekeva. There's no difference regarding the chaylev, regarding the laws of treifos, regarding the gid hanoshe. It's all the same. There's no separation zohar and nekeva.
Rabbi, my FC will agree with this. That nowadays it doesn't matter because all behemoths that are used for meat, the steers, which are zecharim anyway. So.
Okay, so today, that's a modern.
Yes and no that you buy in the store, but the cables they use for airplane food, because they're cheaper quality.
Cows.
When you bite a piece of meat and it bounces around in your mouth, that's a cow, not a steer.
Bologna
it doesn't chew the same.
Yeah.
It also has a smell. You can smell it, and the meat looks, before you cook it, it has more of a orange touch to it. A yellowish look, as opposed to white.
Okay, now let's go to another topic. Another some interesting things about gid hanoshe. A lot of interesting things about gid hanoshe. Number one, gid hanoshe, the halacha of a person. There's a kabbalah. Listen, this is something very interesting. There are people that are very nervous. I know someone like this. Every so often, lately he hasn't bothered me so much because I don't sit near him anymore. He used to every so often come to me and ask me if after davening I can be part of a minion to hatovas hachaloyim. There are certain hatovas. He had a bad dream. That's his nature. He gets all nervous, and he wants you after davening is over. He wants 10 people to spend with him 10 minutes, and he reads off these psukim. It's in the back of every archival sitter. Hatovas hachalim. What I'm going to tell him? No, it's a mishugas. Should go to a doctor and take some medication. Not my business to tell him that. So fine. Lately, he hasn't bothered me so much. So there are people like it. They get very, very nervous, and they have a bad dream. Maybe they're who am I to say something now? Maybe they're right. Maybe they're very holy. They're holy people. They have a connection to the other world, and they see things that the average person doesn't see things. So we know a person has a bad dream. What do? Either you fast, atanis chaloyim, or you do hatovas chaloyim. You recite these psukim, or you give tzedakah, or you say the yihir atzayim. You wait for birchas kohanim, and during birchas kohanim. You say the heroes. Okay, fine. So there was a place that he writes over here is that there's a Mesoira, and these are the Kabbalistic things, which is not really my niche. And there's a Mesoira that the person, he goes to sleep not to put his hand on his thigh. I don't know how you can control yourself when you're sleeping. I'm just telling you to do this for entertainment purposes. Not to put your hand, if a person puts his hand on the Gid Hanoshe, when he sleeps, it will naturally trigger bad or dreams, which a person doesn't, not a happy person, it will be bad dreams, which have nothing to do with anything that's going on in the other world. This is Nogei Halacha L'maisa. A person comes to a rabbi and says, "Rabbi, I had a terrible dream last night. What should I do? Should I fast?" So the rabbi has to say, "Well, if you really feel that it was something, if it really means something to you, then that's the halacha. Tainus halon, you should really should fast, or you should give tzedakah." But here is a technique that a rabbi can say to the person, "Tell me, when you went to sleep, do you know, do you recall, do you have a tendency that your hand is resting on your thigh in the area, I guess, of the sciatic nerve?" Okay, I don't even know where the sciatic nerve is. But if you're a doctor, you know the anatomy and you can identify where the sciatic nerve is. When you sleep, do you have a tendency to allow your hand to rest in that area? And if the answer is yes, if you can make the determination, I don't know how you can, then l'halacha, you could tell the person, you do not fast. The dream is batul u'mevutul, it means nothing. Because the mesorah is, v'ye'ovek ish imoy, the malach who wrestled with Yaakov the entire night. At the end of the wrestling match, before Alois HaShachar, v'yiga b'kaf yirechoy. Obviously there's a connection. What this connection is, I have no idea. This is more Kabbalistic type of stuff. But a person who puts his hand on the Kaf HaYarech when he is sleeping in the middle of the night, it will automatically trigger a wrestling match with the Sidna Shel Esav, which means absolutely nothing, has absolutely no spiritual meaning whatsoever. And this can be used l'halacha to calm a person down and say you have no need to fast, to engage in any type of kindness. It has no meaning whatsoever.
Right side or left side?
So that's right. you have to go look in the books where they show you to the right side, right? It's only
right
on one
side.
Okay, now let's go to another idea. Another idea. Also, by the way, I don't know, it's a little too graphic. I never knew that there was a book. Where did I see this? There's something called Pitzua Daka. Pitzua Daka, and in the sugya Pitzua Daka, there's a difference between the right and the left. The Rambam is very interesting. It's a very, very too graphic. Right and left, and it fits very well with what it says in the Medrash, is that Vayiga b'kaf yirecho relates to Beris Mila. Because in the sugya of Pitzua Daka, there's a chilik lahalacha between the right and the left. And when we pull these pieces together, there's a chilik, the right and the left, at Pitzua Daka. The Gid HaNoshe is the right, now the left. All of these pieces of the puzzle, they all come together, and you start seeing a differentiation between right and left. It is very unique when it comes to Gid HaNoshe. Okay, let's go to another two quick things about Gid HaNoshe. There are three things I want to discuss very quickly. Number next topic of Gid HaNoshe, that is, we have a tradition that there are 365 loisaseis in the Torah. There are 248 mitzvahs asei. There are 365 mitzvahs lois asei. And there are 365 days of the year. Every single day of the year highlights a specific mitzvahs lois asei. Now, we don't know what they are. No one ever came out with a book to tell you exactly, like Meir, he would announce every day, today is the yard site of so-and-so, and today corresponds to the mitzvah of Loi Sigzol. Today corresponds to the mitzvah of Loi Tinof. Today corresponds to the mitzvah of Basa B'cholov. Today corresponds to Shatnez. Okay, no one ever came out, maybe someone did, I don't know, with a book to show you, to prove to you what each day corresponds to. But one thing that is cited very often, just to review, and I'm sure you've heard this, is that Tisha B'Av corresponds to the mitzvahs loisaseh of Gid HaNoshe. Because Gid HaNoshe represents the wrestling match between Klal Yisrael and our enemy, Esav. Halacha b'yadua Esav son Yaakov. And Esav, which is Edom, succeeded in destroying the Beis HaMikdash. And by destroying the Beis HaMikdash, we, in Klal Yisrael, are tzolea al yireichoy. We limp in our journey to reach our destination of Yemais HaMashiach. The day when Vayiga b'kaf yireichoy and al-keim l'yoychul b'nei Yisrael eskir ha-noshe, because of a remembrance of this, the day to emphasize and to focus on the mitzvah, the loisase of Gid HaNoshe is Tisha B'Av. In this very time, if you go on Tisha B'Av to a kinois, to an inspirational speaker, you'll hear this every so often, that Tisha B'Av is the day of Gid HaNoshe, and to analyze the whole story of Gid HaNoshe, to use that as a springboard to understand what Tisha B'Av is all about, this is it. What happened on that day? What happened on that night? Yaakov Avinu, he went to retrieve the Pachim Ketanim. And by doing so, he put himself in grave sakana. In life, the Musar is, don't put yourself in sakana for Pachim Ketanim. Everything in this world, relative to what is in the next world, is Pachim Ketanim. It's like chasing after $1 million. We all fool ourselves in thinking, if only I had $1 billion, I would give so much tzedakah. I would help so many people. I would do incredible things about all of that money. And if only, and we end up pursuing the gashmias our whole lives. And the truth is, it's like going back and spending your entire day to go search for a recyclable, a plastic Diet Coke bottle lying in the bottom of someone's garbage can in order to get back the 5 cent deposit. That's summarized our pursuit of fame and money and kavod in this world. We want kavod, we want parnasa, we want to have a good life. All of the good life that we're trying to pursue and give up time for, it's like a person today running around the entire day to find one Diet Coke bottle on the bottom of someone's garbage can so you can go into ShopRite and say, can I get a 5 cent deposit? Sorry, buddy, we don't do that here. You're pursuing the Pachim Ketanim. All of the gashmis of this world is garnished. It's just a waste of time. Pachim, and I always, I don't mean it like that, obviously, but it's Pachim Ketanim Keneged, the Nitzlis of Olam Haba. Yaakov Avinu, he put his life at risk for the Pachim Ketanim. And what was the result? The result was he was in Sakana, and the Malach won. Vahiga B'Kaf Yirechai. He was injured. And that injury, we suffer from that injury for the rest of our lives. Why was Yaakov Avinu was in Moser Nefesh? It's a very tough question. Rashi says because he earned those bottles, and because it was chodif, the money was, even 5 cent deposit bottle was very, very precious if you earn that money with honesty. But is it kedai to put your life at risk to go get the Pachim Ketanim? Me too. This is the question there's no answer for. Why didn't Yaakov's children accompany him to get back the Pachim Ketanim? Can you imagine you're at home and father says, you know, I have to go outside to go buy something in the store, middle of the night, because whatever. And it's very dangerous outside. Would you let your father go alone? Would you let him go alone? No, I'll walk to the store. No, I'll take you in the car. I'll take you in the car. I don't want you to go alone in the middle of the night. It's dangerous. I'll take you in the car. How was it that Yaakov Avinu went all alone to get the Pachim Ketanim and none of his children accompanied him to protect him? This is an age-old question. How could it be? Where were Yaakov Avinu's children?
They were sleeping.
How could it be? They were sleeping. They were learning the whole night. They were staying up and making trouble the whole night. They did not accompany Yaakov Avinu to get the Pachim Ketanim. We abandoned our father, and therefore he was injured, and we now suffer from that injury for the rest of our lives. And that's also Musa Haskel. And Tisha B'Av is all about dwelling upon the tragedy of how did this happen? Why did this happen? And there are two things that really leap off the page about the tragedy of Vayiga b'kaf yirechai. Number one, is it really kedai to pursue in this world pachim kitanim? Is it really worth it in life to make decisions where we end up devoting ourselves to the pursuit of ridiculous things that take away from us what's really important? Look what happened to Yaakov. He went back for pachim kitanim, and look, was it worth it? It wasn't worth it. How could you say that it was worth it? It was worth Yaakov needing to go to pursue pachim kitanim and suffer the pain of vayiga b'kaf hayarech. Acher hamaisa, so we'll say, wow, he fought with the Malach, he sorisa, he got the name Yisrael. Yeah, in hindsight, everything is very, very nice. But b'shas maisa, if you know in advance that you're going to have a major wrestling match with the Sidna Shel Esav, over what? Over 5 cents deposit to get a refund on a plastic container? Ridiculous.
Maybe it shows the greatness of the mitzvah not to have Baal Tashlis.
No, al pi halacha, it's not correct. Al pi halacha, it's not. According to halacha, and there's no place in the world that will tell you that it's not worth Baal Tashlis. I mean, there are many
to
things
risk
that we
your
do
life.
To risk your life. So it says pachim kitanim.
Why do you think that he's risking his life?
Why did he think that?
Why are we putting it that it was so
dangerous?
In
the middle of the night, to cross over a river in the middle of the night is without any dispute a dangerous thing to do. And Yaakov Avinu, he risked his life. So Chazal come to answer why he did it. But is that halachically, is that the correct, is that a model for us to do something like that? Absolutely not. Okay, you want to say Drush, you have to go look at the Rishonim. You have to see what the Rishonim say, how they go on the analyze. So the simple understanding of it is, this is not something that, this is a lesson to learn from. It's not kedai to risk your life for pachim kitanim. Yaakov risked his life for pachim kitanim, and what happened? Vayiga b'kaf, he almost was killed. And at the end of the battle, Vayiga b'kaf hayorech, and it wasn't worth it to go to the doctors now to have hip replacements. It cost hundreds of thousands of dollars. I don't know exactly what the numbers are, how much insurance pays, but it costs a lot more than 5 cents. And the tircha of taking it to the supermarket and trying to figure out where you bring it to get back your nickel. It's not worth it. It's just plain shuta shel mikra, not worth it. And it's a dogma for us in this world, because our pursuit of gashmius is pachim kitanim. And we're going to get injured. We're going to be spiritually injured. Vayiga b'kaf hayarech. It's a tremendous Musar Haskel for us. Number two, the Musar Haskel is, how do you abandon your father? How do you abandon, how do you let your father wants to go because he wants to be Moser Nefesh? Okay, we'll go with you. If you feel the pachim kitanim are so important, you invested in every penny that you own, you earn honestly, and you don't want to be mevater on the 5 cents, okay, I understand, but we're not going to let you go alone. We're not going to let you go alone. We're going to go with you. We're going to take care of you. We're not going to, there are certain things that you can do. You're safe. That's another lesson. Another lesson. And these are the lessons of Tisha B'Av. Okay, another interesting concept, that a very, very interesting concept, the big machleik is between the Rambam and the Raivet. This is very, very interesting, but the Rambam machleik is on the Raivet, and the Raivet over here is extremely passionate. I'm going to read you the words of the Raivet. The Rambam says an incredible chiddush about Din HaNoshe. There's a halacha when it comes to Karban Pesach. You are required to roast the entire seh or gedi or goat as one entity. We all seen the pictures. You take a carbon, a sheep, you slaughter it, you skin it, and then you put a spit, a metal spit, not metal,
wood spit
down its in its mouth. You stick it through the entire body, and it comes out at the other side of the animal, through probably the part where the waist goes. And you put the stick through, and you roast the animal in one shot. You don't you don't take out of the animal, you don't cut up the limbs, you remove the, I assume you remove the chalef. I do assume that is correct. You take out the chalef. And whatever you need to take out, there's certain parts you have to take out, but that's it. Question is, what about the gid hanoshe? In a regular animal, if you want to prepare an animal, you're not, so today it's not relevant, right. At least not in America, because in America that part of the animal is sold to goyim. But in Eretz Yisrael, it seems that they still do nikur, right. At least some places still, they take out the gid hanoshe. And if you, the halacha is that there are two parts to the gid hanoshe. There is the actual gid, and then there is chelef, there are certain fats that surround the gid. Now, halacha l'maisa, what exactly is osur midaraisa? Is the gid itself. The chelev that surrounds the gid is osur midarabon. And I'll read you the words in a few moments. Example, it says in Shulchan Aruch and the Rambam.
Isn't the chelev that's osur midaraisa?
Yes, that you take out. That chelev from the Karban Pesach you must remove before you roast it.
Who says?
The halacha. I don't have for you a source at this moment. The chelev you remove, but the difference is to remove the chelev of the, you don't have to butcher the animal. To get out the chelev, you don't have to butcher. To get out the chelev of the yanosha would require you, even though Rabelski seemed to say you don't, so I don't really know, it seems that there is at least a possibility you have to mutilate to a degree that's not acceptable the carbon Pesach, to get out those forbidden fats. So therefore the Rambam says an incredible chiddush, that even though ordinarily during the year, if you want to go eat the thigh, that the leg of the animal, you're not allowed to prepare it, you're not allowed to put it into the oven, you're not allowed to roast it until you remove the gid with the chalef. Even though the chalef that surrounds the gid is only also in the rabbanan, you have to first remove it. You can't go and just roast the animal. You can't do it. But Korban Pesach, since the Pasuk says explicitly you're supposed to roast the Korban Pesach in one shot, as one big piece, yeah. And if you're going to remove the gid, you're going to mutilate the animal, yeah?
You can't cut it before you?
What?
How do you take out the innards and let you cut it?
The innards you take.
Right, so it's not a mutilation. I'm making an assumption error. I'm asking, is this correct? To take out the chelef that's inside the animal.
First you're going
to
skin the animal.
That for sure you do. That you skin the animal. Once you skin the animal, it seems that to remove the forbidden fats does not require you to mutilate the animal. You can make a few precise incisions in the animal and pull out what you need to pull out. And you're done. And the animal is still considered a halacha, one complete animal. But if you are going to be required to take out the fats of that surround the gid hanoshe, the amount of cutting that you would need to do would mutilate that part of the animal to a degree that would challenge the integrity of roisho the al kirah, that the big animal and not being basically pieces of the animal. So therefore the Rambam, remember you do as the Rambam, I write the words, Kosav Rambam, Vizel Shoina. Here's a quote. Kisha Adam Oichel es HaPesach, Choyte Chabosar V'Oichel. When a person eats the Korban Pesach, you cut the meat and you eat it, like, of course, Shegia Legir HaNoshe, Moitzi Oy. Okay? And when it comes time to eat, when you at your Pesach Seder, at night, and you're eating the Korban Pesach, and they happen to give you the part of the animal, the leg, that's your portion, right? Everyone gets a kezias. If they happen to give you the part of the animal which has the gid hanoshe, be very careful. When you're sitting at your Pesach Seder, and they put on your plate a piece of the basar from the Korban Pesach, make sure that you don't eat the gid hanoshe. Now, what's the question? So why wait so long? It's a michshol. You should already take out the gid hanoshe before you roast the Korban Pesach. So the Rambam continues.
There's no time in the gid hanoshe.
So what?
No time.
Oh, so let me come down a second. Ve'ein chatchin oisai. But when you prepare the animal for roasting, don't cut it in advance. Ela tsoilin oisai sholei. Now, the Raivin, now, in other words, but when you're going to roast it, complete, there's some forbidden, there's some fats that surround the Gidanosha, which are also Midrabanan. And when you roast it, those fats are going to seep into the basar and make a treif. So the answer, obviously, is what Rav Dov is saying, is that we have a rule that the gid ain the gid noisein tam. The gid has no flavor whatsoever. The gid anosha has no flavor, and the fats have no flavor. It's like a piece of wood, and therefore, when you roast it and the gid anosha and it's present, it does not make the basar treif. Does not make a treif. That's the assumption. Okay, but hold on for one second. Along comes the Ravid. The Halak Ravid, who once said about the Rambam, once wrote about the Rambam, Eloi Moyach Bikot Kodoy. Okay? The Ravid did not spare words for the Rambam. So here, the Ravid over here is another classic Ravid, demonstrating his passion for his attitude towards the Rambam and what he said. The Chos of Ravid behasog boisof. Omar Avram, Aleph. Always says Aleph Aleph. I know once someone said to me as a child, when we arrive, you go to yeshiva, you learn Rambam. I says, yeah.
Omar Avram.
And it says Aleph Aleph. What does Aleph Aleph mean? I said, I don't know. You don't know. He made out of me Mamash Ashmata. So I'll never forget. Aleph Aleph means Omar Avraham. Every Rive begins with Aleph Aleph. I said to him after he cursed me, and I said, I know what it means. It means, I said to him, Orur Atom. You want to go make a star with me? Not nice, right? Okay, but he went too far, this guy. I'm telling you, he went too far. Whatever. But Aleph Aleph. Every writing begins with
that says by Korban Pesach that I wouldn't, you know, after commenting on the Rambam, I wouldn't eat in his house.
So every writing begins with Aleph Aleph, which is Rosh Hashanah. Omar Avraham, that was his name, Avraham. He writes. Look at these sharp words. Bechayei Roshi, I swear. By my head, Ravid. Wow, it's a pretty serious statement to say that. B'chayei Roshi, ein iser gadol mizeh. There is no greater prohibition than this. Sheyitzle haPesach, to roast a carbon Pesach im gid hanosha v'im shamlei. How dare you? The Rambam says that when it comes time to roast a carbon Pesach, don't take out the gid, don't remove the shulon that surrounds the gid. You roast the gid, the Korban Pesach, complete, the way it is, in one shot, with the gid hanosha inside. And then when they serve dinner, when they serve you the Korban Pesach at the Seder, then if you are the lucky guy to get the portion of the yam which has the gid hanosha, so you take it out. You need to be careful not to eat that portion. But when you roast it in one shot. The writing says there is no greater isur. Can you imagine? I would think there are a lot worse things you can do. Okay, a lot worse things you can possibly do. Ein, I swear, he says, b'chayei roishi, by my life, of my head, ein iser gadol mizeh sheyitzle haPesach im agir anosha v'im shamlai. V'im eske, if I merit to witness the coming of Mashiach and the Binyan Beis HaMikdash, the oichal Pesach, the Yavi Lefonaikis, and someone would show me a carbon Pesach that was roasted with the Gid Hanosha inside of it. You know what I would do? Hayisi Choivtoi Bekarko Lefonov. I would take it, I would go find where is the Rambam? Where is the Rambam? At least he's Moy the Rambam, right? Where is the Rambam? I would take it and I would throw it on the floor in front of him as a sign of disrespect. How dare you, Paskin, that you can do this, you can roast a carbon Pesach with the Gid Hanosha still inside. Pilei Ployim. Okay, Pilei Ployim. Now obviously, the Rambam says, what's the lomus of the Rambam? So obviously the Rambam is Lashitasar, obviously, because really it's a machlokes that the Gid Hanosha has tam, has flavor, if the Shuman has slaver, the Rambam paskins the Gid Hanoshe she'ein begidin b'noy same tam v'shamnoi. The Rambam says v'feirish she'ein boy iser. There is absolutely no prohibition min haTorah to eat the Shuman, the fat that surrounds the Gid Hanoshe. It is permitted. The Torah only prohibits the Gid, not the Shuman. But the Rambam says there is she'ein boy iser elo. Sheyisrael kidoshim, they're holy people. Nohagu ba'yisr, it's a minhag. It's nothing more than a minhag to remove the shuman that surrounds the git. Uve Pesach, so the Rambam basically says, how then could it be that I allow you to roast the entire Karban Pesach, including the git and the shuman? So he says, uve Pesach loy nohagu. Pesach, the minhag was not to be machmir, not to take out the git. Not to take out the shuman, because the gid has no flavor. It's a piece of wood, according to the Rambam. And the shuman maker din is mutl b'chatzilah. It's only on minog. And if you're going to take it out, you're going to mutilate that part of the animal, and you're not going to be roasting an animal that is complete. The reason why we don't take it out, because we don't want you to mutilate it. Adkan l'shoyne. Unbelievable. What the Rambam says. Now over here, I don't really understand this, but over here, the Bnei Yisoschar, which is not really a halachic sefer, it's more of a drush, and he's mafalpel on this topic. It's a very interesting topic, and he wants someone to make a suggestion that there's a chil. This is something which is very, very fascinating, because we mentioned yesterday that the Gid Hanoshe is the only mitzvah that was given before Matan Torah, that it was not upgraded. There now, before Matan Torah, there was a requirement to bring a Karban Pesach. There are many dinim of the Karban Pesach of Yitzias Mitzrayim that are different than the Karban Pesach of Bezban Hazeh. After Yitzias Mitzrayim of Har Sinai, after Yitzias Mitzrayim, when they came into Eretz Yisrael, Pesach, they bring a Karban Pesach. The laws of the Karban Pesach that are done at the time of when they came into Eretz Yisrael, there are many halachas that are not exactly the same as the Karban Pesach that was done in the time of Mitzrayim. By Mitzrayim, they had to take the blood of the Karban Pesach and smear it on the mashkaif and the shtei mezuzos. Obviously, the Karban Pesach was not there, it was 4 days. You had to have the Karban Pesach be inspected for 4 days. Shabbos HaGadol. Okay, there are a lot of halachas. So there's a question, maybe this also was enough to mean the halacha. Maybe by the Karban Pesach of Yitzias Mitzrayim, maybe then indeed they would roast the entire animal, including the Gid Hanoshe. Because at that point in time, these chumris of the Shuman, the laws of the forbidden fats and other elements were not yet accepted. But after they came into Eretz Yisrael, maybe Taka then the requirement was that you have to first remove the Gid Hanoshe from the animal before you roast the Karban Pesach. But if that Taka would be true, that there's a difference between the law of how you prepare the Karban Pesach before Yitzias Mitzrayim and after Tam Yitzias Mitzrayim and all generations, then it would come out that there is an upgrade in the law of Gid Hanoshe from before Matan Torah and after Matan Torah. And then after Min is in the preparation of the Karban Pesach. We have a tradition that there is no difference between the laws of Gid Hanoshe before Matan Torah and after Matan Torah. If you're going to say there's going to be a differentiation between the preparation of the Karban Pesach because of the problem of roasting the animal and the Gid Hanoshe is still inside, and you can differentiate between the time and before Matan Torah, it didn't make a difference, and after Matan Torah, you have to be more machmir, and you have to take it out because of the shuman and the other elements. It comes out that there is indeed going to be a very big nafkamina, and which is not what we assume to be correct. In any event, this he concludes over here, and it says something very fascinating. He says that, you know, there's a very big dilemma. Why don't we bring Bezman Hazeh a Karban Pesach? There's many rayos that a Karban Pesach after the Churban, there are rayos that after the Churban Bayis Sheni, they continued to be makriv the Karban Pesach every year in Eretz Yisrael as long as they were still living there. Okay, they
Bar Kochba revolt.
Bar Kochba, there were 52 years still to go, And even though there was the assassination of Gedaliah ben Achikam, and the vast majority fled, 42,000, they fled to Egypt. There were people that stayed around. And there's no question, it appears that even after Chomei Sanish, they still were makom to come to Pesach on Pesach. Why? You don't need a bias to be makom the Korban Pesach.
The reason we don't, because you don't have a Kohen Miuchas.
Oh, so that's a very controversial thing.
Right.
So there's a lot of discussion. It's a very popular topic for Rabbanim.
Did it have to be done at the base of Mikdash?
Yes. So they knew they had at the location. So the Chorban happened, the whole Mish was destroyed, and they went away. And the going went away, the Romans went back home. So there's no Beis HaMikdash, there's no structure, but they knew where the exact location of the Mizbeach was.
Right.
They knew where the Mizbeach was. They were Kehanim Yuchasim. They still had a big day Kahuna. And they did whatever they needed to do. They were able to go and offer a Korban Pesach in the location. And the location.
This is the proof is in the Haggadah when he says Pesach Zu, Sha'anu Oakland. What do you mean Pesach Zu?
They continued even after the Korban. So this is a very big topic. Is why, even let's say today, Tavshin coming up, Habolein, Untoy, Tavshin, Pei Gimel. Well, the Mashiach should be here already by then. But let's say even right now, so you can't go. There's no Beis HaMikdash. But if we can figure out where the precise location of the Mizbeach is, so our world Tnei Nes, so Tuma Chutra B'Tzibur. There's a solution to every problem. You want a Kohen Miuchas? If the Kohen is good enough to get the first Aliyah, if he's good enough to Duchen. And say Yivarechacha, Gidoy Lechazaka. He's good enough for Pinyin Aben? Did you give him the 5 coins? Does he duchen? Give him the first Aliyah? That's all you need. Until proven otherwise, he's a Kohen. Bidei Kahuna? We have.
Pinyin Aben is something else, because a lot of Rabbanim who used to go around giving slime to various Kohanim to make sure.
That's not so Pasha to do that.
I know,
that's a better
paragraph. There were people who did that.
Gidoyla Chazaka. You want Big Day Kahuna? They have. The Temple Institute has Big Day Kahuna in every size. Mark every size. Large, medium. They have Big Day Kahuna ready to go. And they have Tuma to Bitsibor. Location? You don't know where the Mizbeach is? Tell you what. We have a lot of archaeologists. And they all seem to say they know everything. And you know, we'll take a vote. You take a vote? Achre Rabim Lahatois, take a vote, good enough. Torah Bashamayimi. Why not? There have been people who have really, really sincerely promoted bring Bizman Azer Kar Pesach.
With the Arab,
they get arrested.
So basically, the answer really comes down to World War III. That's the answer. You want World War III to break out? You want World War III to break out? So therefore, that's the answer. But part of the people who don't, part of the discussion is very interesting, is we can't bring, because we cannot be machria between the Rambam and the Ravid. That's what he says over here. It's not an answer. Okay, these are all excuses.
Right.
We're Tomei, we don't know the location is, right. World War III. Just pay them enough money, they'll look the other way. We're not starting World War III, we'll give you $2 million. You look the other way, we'll bring a Korban Pesach, we don't report it to the media. If you really want to bring up Bizman Azer, World War III won't break out.
Anthony Blinken said they can't even pray on the mountain.
Yeah, Anthony Blinken, what is his business? Mind his own business. What is his business? He paid them enough money, tell them, don't report it to the media, look the other way, and let us do what we need to do, and we won't have World War III. They'll be very, very happy to take the money. Take the money and let you do whatever you want. So, location, we have... Okay, so all of these answers are not answers, mm-hmm. They're excuses.
Right. Right.
And one of the answers that's not an answer, but it's an excuse that's part of the topic of conversation is, we don't want to bring the Korban Pesach Bizman Azeh, because we can't be machria between the Rambam and the Ravid. Should we remove the Gid HaNosheh before we roast it, or should we not remove the Gid HaNosheh before we roast it? If we don't remove the Gid HaNosheh before we roast it, it's treif. We can't eat it. And if we do remove the Gid HaNosheh, then you've mutilated the animal. And by mutilating the animal, you're now no longer being mekayim roishoy al kira'ov. You have to burn the animal, roast the animal in one piece from the head to the legs. in one shot. So because we cannot be machria between this passionate machloikis between the Rambam and the Ravid, where the Ravid swore b'chayei roishi ein l'cho isur gadol mizeh, and the Rambam says no, that's how you got to do it. It's another excuse, not an answer, as to why we don't bring the carbon Pesach.
Amen.